It's lights out and away we go. What a match day this was.
My mama said that your life is a gift. And my mama said there's much weight you will lift. And my mama said leave those bad boys alone. And my mama said be home before the dawn. And my mama said you can be rich or poor. But my mama said you can be big or small. But I'm always on the run.
Podcasting from Studio 2520. Somewhere near Akron, Ohio, and live via the paid subscription of Zencastr, the campus of Otterbein University. As always, this is Tackling the Chicane. So this is a cut off of the album released in 1991 called Mama Said by Lenny Kravitz. And if you have not explored this one, you probably should. First single from his second album, contribution by Guns N' Roses guitarist Slash. Slash had written the song with the original intention on releasing it in on a Guns N' Roses studio album, but former drummer Steven Adler had difficulty playing the song, so he eventually saved the song for his own LP. Although on June 6, 1992, during a Guns N' Roses Use Your Illusion stop in Paris, Kravitz joined the band on stage playing the guitar and singing vocals on this track. So that is your musical muse for this week.
Well, just perfect there to get episode 80 of the show fired. And another milestone down. And, you know, I think we're going to settle back into a weekly rotation here after it's been a little hit or miss, admittedly. But settled into the summer for myself. So back to our weekly jam starting now. And, you know, 2 weeks off and... I mean, what hasn't happened in those 2 weeks? So obviously we'll lead off with the sort of the elephant in the room, but the back half of the show will be spent checking in on the Scottish Premiership title race, which is going to come to a head this Saturday when Celtic and Rangers meet for the final time in the league. If Celtic win, that is basically that, not mathematically, but pretty much. And then the Premier League title race, which has kind of just gone down to Arsenal and Manchester City at this point, will continue with the 36th match week of 38. So both leagues coming down to the final weekend here soon, which promises to bring drama aplenty. So we will get into that on the back half of the program here, but the Miami Grand Prix weekend happened in Miami Gardens, Florida at the Hard Rock Stadium. I do want to talk about the sprint race, but I think it would be a little stupid not to just say, folks, Lando Norris won the Miami Grand Prix.
Yeah, so for me personally, this was not because of the win for Lando, but just a great GP weekend all around. And I think we saw for the first time maybe a little bit of a slot in the Red Bull, or a slit in the Red Bull's armor, a chink in the armor, if you will. The car looked okay, but we have some incidents that kind of put this race into formation, and we'll talk about that. But before we do, let's just give McLaren their proper credits for, you know, just driving a fantastic race, and had to defend the position a few times, I think. The safety car kind of brought McLaren up to the front of the field, but at the same time, where we have seen Red Bull be so dominant, they just couldn't quite get it back in this one.
No, I think you have to credit the strategist of McLaren for this win and the upgrades that McLaren brought to Miami. Clearly something worked there on the mechanical side, but with the strategy, this was a race of track position. And they had their strategy dialed. And a sort of a rare miss from Red Bull in that regard, where with that virtual safety car, Verstappen waits too long to pit. And by the time he comes out of the pit, the race had already gone back to green and he loses track position. And that kind of gives Lando a pretty big advantage. But kind of before we get into the nuts and bolts of the race, I just want to say, like, I think we all knew that Lando Norris is going to be a driver that gets quite a few of these race wins during his career. It was always just a matter of when it was going to happen. And he was always the driver that was so close yet so far in many instances. He has finished second 8 times in his Formula One career without getting a win until Miami. So
yeah,
it was a huge deal.
Yeah. Everything kind of slotted well for them. There was a few things that we should probably talk about. I have notes here. Hulkenberg held up half of the field plus 7 seconds back driving defensively before lap 23, where that's where the Red Bull car hit the marker cone.
Mm-hmm.
That brings out the BSC, and then 5 laps later, full safety car because Sargeant went into the wall.
Wrecked by Kevin Magnussen, who drove like a chicken with its head cut off pretty much the entire weekend, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, it's a good point, because we have to – Sargeant kind of gets the backslap of, well, you fucking put a car off again, mm-hmm. but not by his own volition in this particular incident. So, but that's what set the table for Norris to, you know, pit strategy wise, end up and had to defend that position for most of the race. But what a great showing for the McLaren team.
Yeah, so it was sort of a, this race was really pre-safety car and post. And it, I'll be honest, not the most eventful race you'll ever see. It just so happened that that safety car, like you said, sort of sets into motion a sort of historic moment in Formula One where Lando Norris gets his maiden victory. So after Hülkenberg, or excuse me, Magnussen does his best impression of the Headless Horseman for a while through the first 20 or so laps. Sargeant is out, spins out, his day is done, brings out the safety car. And if you remember, the safety car actually picks up the wrong guy. It picks up Max Verstappen. So Lando Norris kind of just is driving around by himself as the rest of the field is behind the safety car, which is, it didn't really have a huge effect in the end because eventually, you know, the safety car got up to him, but it was just kind of a peculiar event. And me personally, I'm thinking, okay, Lando Norris in the lead, we've seen this before. He led last year, I believe it was at the British GP, in a sort of similar instance, and Verstappen just passed him in a few seconds. And I don't know about you, but I thought that was exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah, I had the same feeling until they ran a few laps under green. And then as the seconds kind of ticked away, I was a bit nervous about, you know, what may or may not happen. But clearly the car, when it was in clean air, was fast. And, you know, it was just like Red Bull does, lap after lap. You pick up 5 tenths or a second here and there. And I didn't ever really feel comfortable that Norris would take the victory until he got up several seconds over the lead car. Let's talk a little bit about Haas and the penalties that were inflicted on this particular team for this race. And I felt like it was a little bit unfair. I guess it is what it is as far as that goes, but you know, it was a 10-second penalty, then it was another 10-second penalty.
And it was compounded from his Magnussen's driving in the sprint race as well, where he battled with Hamilton and was racy, shall we say. I think he accrued a penalty in that race too to hold off the rest of the field as Hülkenberg scored points in that sprint race. With Magnussen, he's a pit bull. You know, he doesn't really seem to give a shit about if he's being nice, or I guess, I don't know, just a driver that is courteous, a racer that is courteous on the track. When he is in the position where he is clearly holding up the field so Hülkenberg can score, it's very clear that he will do whatever he feels necessary to keep the rest of the field back, because that's the position he's been in quite a few times this season already. And I think, you know, the sergeant thing is warranted. He did just take him out. Some of the other penalties, I would kind of agree. And going back to previous weekends where he incurred penalties, I think there have been a few that have been a little bit on the harsh side. And if I'm not mistaken, he's like one penalty away from a race suspension at this point, I think.
Yeah, I think it's just bad luck. When you're in that that position back in the field, he's obviously going to defend as greatly as he needs to. So I don't have a lot of mid lap race notes here, but you know, Sainz had a call late lap 42. Something was wrong with the car, but I don't think it ended up being anything of any real notable mark here. I also have a note here that there was possibly some radio calls that were more strategic because Norris, with 10 to go, is asked if he wanted to stay out or pit. And honestly, when they first called it, I was like, well, there's no reason to pit here. Mm-hmm. But I think it was more of just trying to screw with the other teams behind him, whether or not he wanted to take tires or not.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about, well, what do you think about the tire you're on? Oh, it looks good. Well, possibly do this or that. And I was like, if you guys pit this late in a race, you're gonna screw the whole entire position. And then it kind of just ended up not being a thing. So
that was a moment where
I have a giant note here that says stay out.
Yeah.
Because I fell into the same trap that they were trying to trap everyone else in.
Yeah, I don't.
Are we really gonna go?
I'm not sure. I'm sure there wasn't any real reason to pit there. However, with Piastri getting into a little bit of a skirmish with Sainz to the point where they actually make contact, he is told to pit and basically spends the rest of the race, say 10 or 15 laps maybe a little bit more than that, trying to climb his way up the field quite aggressively, to the point where McLaren radios him and say, hey, your teammate's in the lead. Don't bring out a safety car, a lead that he is building on too. So I know you're a little pissed off that, because his day started out really good. He was in second for quite a while. I know you're kind of upset that shit kind of hit the fan, but let's make sure we get this win.
Yeah. So, 3 to go and coming down to the end of this race, Albon tanks. And I have so much sympathy for the Williams team. They're just trying to make some kind of a show.
And I
just can't get a good luck stroke.
I don't know what. I don't know what the hell they did this winter. Seriously, I think they totally just butchered the design for this car this year. It is a piece of shit. It is a tractor to the point where now Alpine has a point before Williams. And Alpine going into the season, we knew was going to be a disaster. What is wrong with that? First off, let's get the obvious out of the way. Logan Sargeant is done. He is done. He might see another race. We will see. But there's absolutely no way he goes longer than the summer break. So he's kind of just a dead duck out there. He's a body in a car. Albon is obviously a very skilled driver who I think everyone knows is better than the team he's on. Obviously a mistake here, but that team, it has got to be the most disappointing team on the grid at the moment, for me at least. Yeah.
Well, we'll see how that plays out, but I think my takeaway from this race is, and I think we probably said this pre-season, this won't be the first or the last victory that a McLaren car takes this year. We'll see, but nice to see just kind of a mix up in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Just not the typical Red Bull dominance. So mm-hmm. anytime any team can unseat the great victor, then I'll take that.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a sign of things to come for 2024. You're still going to see Red Bull pretty much dominate from here on out. I think a little bit of fortune had to go McLaren's way with the safety car. It was really interesting to see Norris build the lead, which I'm a little perplexed about because I don't really understand what the difference was from lap 1 to lap 30 for Verstappen with his car, other than he hit a cone. You would think that wouldn't have compromised much. I mean, there wasn't any visible damage, but I don't know.
Possibly could have made the aero different.
Yeah, I'm a little, I don't really understand how Verstappen's performance just kind of fell off a cliff. So I don't know. Verstappen still cruises in the sprint. He still has yet to be unseated in qualifying for a GP this weekend. So I think you and I both know that it's got to be measured here. Will McLaren win another race this year? I definitely could, for sure. Ferrari are still there, and I think will be there more often than not when Red Bull slips up, which seems to be kind of happening a little bit more often this season. So we will just have to see. But yeah, it was obviously incredibly refreshing to see a first-time victor in Formula One.
Well, and you can see what that does to the round here or the series. Obviously, much more to talk about post-race. And even pre-race, always good to have someone who can unseat Verstappen. And I guess I will take that for what it's worth, but wins in this series beget wins. So hopefully we'll see another strong showing here mm-hmm. coming up. We're a week or so out from the race in, I believe it's Italy.
Yeah, Emilia Romagna. So, yeah.
So let's just, we'll just dip right quickly into driver standings here. Obviously, we've got a pretty much a boat race thus far. Verstappen with 136, Perez slots in behind him with 103. Then we've got 98 points for Leclerc and 83 for Lando Norris, tied with Carlos Sainz for 83 points. And then after that, it dips off pretty quickly with Piastri at 41, Russell 37, and Fernando Alonso rounds out the eighth spot at 33, Hamilton 27, and in 10th, this is pretty notable that Yuki Tsunoda is in the 10th spot, and I think we really have to watch the RB Honda car.
Mm-hmm.
With Yuki, because he just seems to be hanging around a bit.
Yeah, actually a damn good day in Miami at P7 and Daniel Ricciardo with a P4 in the sprint. So actually ended up being a very solid weekend for RB / V Carb / Visa Cash App / AlphaTauri / Toro Rosso, whatever you want to call it.
Whatever you want to call them this week.
Yeah.
Constructors is a little bit more a fold here. Red Bull with 239 points. Ferrari coming up behind with 187. And then we have McLaren Mercedes at 124. After that, it kind of dips off a bit. But yeah, so even in the constructor standings, RB at the sixth position with 19 points. Mm-hmm. So let's kind of watch that RB team and watch Yuki if he can get up there in the sixth or fifth position. A lot of points to be gained there. So.
Yeah, and that team is two guys battling for seats for 2025. I would say advantage pretty heavily to Tsunoda right now. I still think it makes sense to put Liam Lawson into that seat for 2025 as opposed to Daniel Ricciardo. This weekend was also, we watched that the pre-race or pre-weekend warm-up, and a lot of it was spent talking about, you know, drivers' futures. And we did learn since the last time we recorded that Nico Hülkenberg will be joining the Audi project for next year. They'll be Kick Sauber for next year, but obviously 2026, that'll be the Audi team. I kind of feel like that's where Carlos Sainz will end up. If you pressed me on it, I kind of feel like that's where it's going to be. That's a very compelling driver lineup, I think, Hülkenberg and Sainz.
I also think that in the back half of this season, possibly three races to go, we will have to do a driver prediction show,
mm-hmm.
where we will take each team and who do we think is going to be in the seat for each team.
Yeah.
I think we have to wait a bit. It's too early.
Yeah.
Right now to do that. But I think towards the back half of this season that would be a compelling prediction for you and I to say, okay, here's each team. Here's my lineup. Even if we're completely wrong.
Yeah. But there are some ones that I like, okay, you have Red Bull. It's pretty much, I don't think it's going to change. McLaren is beyond locked right now. But other than that, it's like,
it's kind of a free for all.
Yeah. Valtteri Bottas, Zhou Guanyu, are either of them going to be in F1 next year? I don't know. Yeah. Sargent, no. Albon, who knows? Pierre Gasly, Esteban Ocon, don't think either of them are too thrilled with their standing right now. Kevin Magnussen, I don't know. Potentially.
Maybe out.
Maybe. Who knows? Will he get re-signed? Fernando Alonso re-signed Aston Martin. And then you also have to factor in guys like Oliver Bearman, who would probably go to that Haas project. Williams are tossing around every young Mercedes Academy driver to ever exist right now. So we'll see about that as well. So it will be very interesting.
Yeah, you kind of have to keep an eye on the F2 and F3 series as mm-hmm. well. quite a few drivers coming up through that.
Yeah.
And if they want to dip their toe into a possible female seat, there's quite a few that are looking fairly well right mm-hmm. now. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you have anything else in the Formula One world or I guess motorsport in general before moving on?
Oh, just sad to see that, Haas couldn't get into the points at this race. They were so close.
Yeah. Not a total bust weekend with the P7 effort in the sprint, a couple points there, but yeah. Still a team that I think is exceeding pretty much all expectations at the moment. So I think they'll continue to be battling for points throughout the season.
As they should.
Yes. Okay, well.
A note on the seat for the IndyCar for McLaren. They have signed a driver for not possibly, but the rest of the entire season.
Yeah. So Théo Pourchaer, the young Frenchman, he is actually the reigning Formula 2 champion, obviously correct. Not competing.
Yeah, correct.
So he's raced two races so far in that McLaren seat in IndyCar, one better than the other. The whole team was pretty terrible at Barber. He will pilot that machine for the upcoming Indy GP, which is Saturday, which I'm looking forward to. I think it's going to be Callum Ilott for the 500. They're not throwing in a guy who's never done ovals to the Indy 500. But then, yeah, he will take on the remaining calendar, starting with Detroit the week after the 500.
And I'm guessing they'll have as many as three entries in the 500.
They'll have four entries. Four? With Kyle Larson.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll probably talk more 500 talk in the next couple of weeks, but Kyle Larson is someone that I think is going to bring a lot of eyeballs to that race from the NASCAR world. So that'll be interesting for sure. All right. Well, in that case, I think we can go ahead and move on into the world of soccer, which obviously many things have happened since the last time we recorded, but we're really going to hunker down on our two title races here, and then we'll also shift our attention June 1st to the UEFA Champions League final, that is the European Cup, which it was confirmed yesterday will be between Real Madrid of Spain and Borussia Dortmund of Germany. They have kind of been the underdog tale throughout the knockout round, so that is June 1st at Wembley Stadium in London. And reminder, that is the crowns the European champion. That's pretty much the most prestigious club trophy a team could win, especially obviously in Europe. So we will turn our attention to that when it comes. But for now, why don't we get into the weekend that was in Scotland? With our focus here on the match between Rangers and Kilmarnock. A quick thing, a quick look at the table will show that Celtic remain top with three matches to play, 84 points. Rangers, three matches to play, down 3 points, which obviously means the upcoming match Saturday at 7:30 a.m. Eastern between Celtic and Rangers will be of great importance. If Celtic win, that's, like I said, kind of that. If Rangers win, obviously it's all to play for the last two matches of the season. So each team has really had to kind of take care of business leading up into this point. Celtic beat Hearts 3-0 last weekend at home. That was kind of like, you felt like the big hurdle leading up to the big derby, of course. And Rangers had to face, I think it's fair to say, a pretty scrappy Kilmarnock team that has sort of exceeded our expectations here on the show. They sit fourth, reminder, fourth place, so on 52 points. This wasn't super straightforward, at least from the get-go for Rangers. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, so I felt like coming into this match that the commentary thought that it might be a swing and a miss or a swing and a go for this Rangers team. Not so much. This first half was very well contested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had some offsides. We had basically what we come down to, at least in my notes, is, you know, an own goal, which scores the first point in this match, and that's never something that you want to see, but
no. Yeah, that was a sort of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but like, you felt like it was pretty unfortunate, I guess is what I'm trying to say. The first 12 or so minutes, maybe even to more like the 20th minute, honestly, kind of your VAR show, very stop start, reviews, galore, handball this, offside that, the second minute, there was a penalty check for a handball, actually to the point where the referee goes to the monitor, but no penalty given to Rangers in that instance. Seventh minute, Killy with a pretty bad giveaway to Rangers. Serial Dessers of Rangers gets taken down, and a pen is awarded, but then offside is given. So there was an actual foul. However, it doesn't count because he was offside. So yeah, there was just sort of a strange first few minutes.
My note was foreboding because I thought that, okay, that gives Kilmarnock a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the 19th minute offside VAR, unbeaten in the last five games, this Rangers team.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So,
yeah, that is correct.
Red card, and then that took a player off the field for basically, you know, the rest of the first half.
Yeah, so this is sort of the rules of the game coming into effect. Rangers are a team that pretty consistently are given, I will say, given plenty of opportunities by the referees. So in the 19th minute, a long ball from John Lundstrom to Fabio Silva. And it's a good first touch effort for Silva on goal, but not quite good enough. However, a penalty is awarded for handball on the Kilmarnock defender that was given, and they felt it was a blatant and handball to the point where the defender did it intentionally. In the box, which is a red card offense in most instances. I think the commentary felt maybe he was a little hard done to be sent off, but it's kind of tough shit, honestly. Yeah.
So be it.
Yeah. However, James Tavernier steps up and actually has his penalty saved, if you'll recall.
Correct.
Yeah. So this was the first 25 minutes of this game were just sort of all hell had broken loose onto the pitch. Very stop-start. There was no real flow of this game, which I think actually helped Kilmarnock there.
Yeah, so we go past half, and then in the 53rd, Silva scores the equalizer, 1-1. Fast forward 10 minutes or so, and Rangers score, I think, Davis, 2-1. 2-1 yeah. Rangers, and then it kind of just flowed from there. 3-1, 4-1.
Yeah, once the game settled into a rhythm, Rangers were pretty much always going to dominate. Kilmarnock, Richard has made his appearance. Kilmarnock are a team that need the game to be choppy. They need it to be, especially on the road at Ibrox, they need it to be sort of, yeah, just physical, kind of messy stop start. So all of that pretty much happened in the first 25 or so minutes. Once Rangers were able to play with the ball at their feet, bang it around the park a little bit, their talent was always going to kind of just be too much for Kilmarnock to handle. Wondering if Richard has any thoughts. It doesn't appear so, as I think he's making his way out of the facility.
On the keyboard of the other computer.
Well, he is our executive producer, so just making sure things are up to par here. Yeah, so like you said, the goals kind of just flow in a pretty orderly manner after that. 67th minute. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, 67th minute, there was a decent chance for Kilmarnock. Lewis Mayo's shot goes just wide. But like you said, just a few minutes later in the 71st, actually a very good effort from Tom Lawrence, smashed home for the goal. Kilmarnock's defense pretty much just not even there. Traffic cones sent the wrong way. 3-1. Rangers would get one in the 93rd minute from John Suter in a header after the Kilmarnock keeper kind of parries away the initial effort to make it 4-1. That was pretty much that. They probably had to break a little bit of a sweat, especially in that first half. But at the end of the day, the business was done for Rangers.
Yeah. So, entertaining match to watch, but we get to the 4-1 final, and you know, as much as we would like to see a team like Kilmarnock come in and maybe possibly rout the Rangers, not so.
Yeah, always unlikely. Always unlikely for a team to march into Ibrox and get their way. For them to lead for so long was made it fairly compelling. Anytime Rangers go down, Twitter kind of gets excited. And then pretty much, I'm assuming most of the Celtic fans that were watching pretty swiftly tuned out if they weren't watching for academic reasons like us. So, but yeah, this sets up a huge, 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 huge derby between Celtic and Rangers Saturday, so 2 days from now from the time of recording, 7:30 a.m. Eastern, 12:30 there, at Celtic Park. And Celtic have kind of rounded into nice form after pretty easily taking care of Hearts 3-0 at home. We got a double from Kyogo there. Matt O'Reilly scores a penalty late. And it's all shaping up to be pretty much a title decider. Obviously, if Celtic go and win, they'll be 6 points up with only 2 games left. So they could lose both games, and Rangers most likely won't make it up on goal difference. So Rangers are in a must-win situation. They have to win to stay in the title race. So all to play for Saturday. So that'll be must-watch television for us here.
I will make a point to tune in live on Saturday. I don't think I have anything that will keep me from doing that. So I shall. On what venue?
I believe that'll be on the CBS Sports Network. I will just do a little quick check here, but I'm almost certain that's what it'll be on. CBS Sports Network.
Okay.
Which is available on the Hulu streaming service. Not plugging, just saying that's for our own purposes, that's what it's on.
So tuning in for that live, for sure.
Because yes.
that's the penultimate match.
Pretty much.
Particular season.
So. Pretty much. If Celtic win, you're feeling pretty damn good. They would only need 1 point from 2 games, so you would think that would be in the works. So it's kind of crazy, but we're at the business end now. So that's that in Scotland. That's kind of where things stand. As for in England, things have really kind of shifted since the last time we've recorded. Liverpool have pretty much thrown away their title hopes. Bad results in the league leave them 5 points adrift from Arsenal with only 2 matches remaining. You don't see them making that up. Man City are still the favorites. They have 3 matches to play as opposed to Arsenal's 2, so they have 9 points they could win. And they're only 1 point back from Arsenal. So for Arsenal to win the title, they're going to need Man City to drop points between now and May 19th, Championship Sunday in England. As for the other team involved in this match, Tottenham, it's Ange Postecoglou has kind of faced his first real tough period. On form, they've actually lost 4 in a row now. And they're still going to finish most likely 5th in the league, which is an improvement from last year. But to say there's plenty of work to be done in London there is definitely an understatement. That's a team that they're going to need to dip into the pocketbook this summer to bolster that squad. And that's what my first note was with this match, Liverpool versus Tottenham in the Premier League. Ange facing real scrutiny for the first time, and Liverpool kind of out of the race. So two teams not really in their best moments in the season. However, a pretty entertaining match comes out of it.
Entertaining, but dominant as well.
Yeah.
So we have a 16th minute Salah goal puts Liverpool up 1-0. And then not a lot of notable, unless you have anything. I mean, we went quickly to the 45th where Robertson scores the second goal for Liverpool, 2-0.
Yeah, so it was certainly a very dominant first half from Liverpool. Tottenham have a couple of good looks, not really chances, in like the first 5 minutes of this match, and then they don't do anything for a whole half, really. Salah has that effort go off the bar in the 8th minute, and then Tottenham just keep giving away the ball. And Liverpool's press was clearly just way too much for Tottenham, which leads me to believe that Tottenham need better players essentially next season, especially I think the midfield needs improvement. The defense, oh my God, their defense is bad. So that is something they really need to lock in for this summer to improve on their fifth place. But yeah, we get that goal in the 16th minute from Salah to make it 1-0. Cody Gakpo on the assist there. First half completely dominated by Liverpool. Andy Robertson basically has a tap in after the ball is parried away by the keeper from the original Mo Salah effort. And then not even 5 minutes later, Cody Gakpo of Liverpool heads home a great pass from Harvey Elliott, who had a very, very good match, to make it 3-0 to Liverpool.
And then 60th minute, I believe it was still Elliott who scored that number 4 goal. And then finally, we have a Tottenham kind of, okay, we're going to try to do something here in the 73rd, 4-1. But that is our final score in this particular match. I don't have a ton of notes on this one, but not the Hotspur team that we have seen earlier.
Well, yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, I remember earlier in the season us coming on and talking about Spurs and being impressed with how they're playing, and you especially were really on that kind of the Spurs bandwagon there for a while, you know, because they were playing good football under Ange. And it's not that the framework is there, clearly, because they can score goals. They are fun to watch. They play impressive soccer. The defense is just horrible, and I think a lot of that has to do with the personnel. It kind of reminds me of Ange's first season with Celtic, where
you're trying to get your feet wet a little bit.
New league, new environment, a team that he had no say of who he inherits. It's not like he transferred in most of these guys. So you're really kind of just playing with the cards you're dealt with, which weren't very good. Now, Ange in Scotland was kind of which no one thought, because when he came into Celtic, that club was a disaster. Rangers had won the title. Celtic were in second by, I think it was 25 points. By that end of that campaign, and he comes in with a team that some people actually, there were people thinking Celtic could finish like third in the league, which is kind of unheard of. It starts out pretty rough, but he actually eventually is able to lead the team to the title there in Scotland. And it's sort of the opposite effect, which is kind of weird, in London this year with Spurs, where it starts out really well, as we know, and it's kind of tapered off since then. But I still think a lot of this is not totally in his control. I mean, you saw it in this match that their defense is just so bad. And I think much of that is personnel induced. But this is obviously a match between two big clubs that I think many would have circled at the beginning of the year as being pretty important in the run-in here. But unfortunately, Spurs have kind of settled into fifth. Liverpool are all but out of the title race. So it didn't have the stakes that I was hoping it would, but still pretty entertaining. As for what we will look for the Premier League this upcoming weekend, Manchester United play Arsenal. So Arsenal are on the road. That is going to be must win for Arsenal. So that is one we will be paying attention to, as well as the Glasgow Derby in Scotland the day before. Manchester City play Saturday on the road against Fulham. You would expect them to win, but who knows? So those are kind of the two big matches we are looking towards. And like I said at the beginning of the segment, focusing on the title races for now, and then we will kind of conclude our club season coverage with the Champions League final between Real Madrid and, I think, pretty much everyone's favorite story, underdog story right now, Borussia Dortmund, June 1st. And then we'll have sort of a couple weeks, and then we're going to have to really clamp down and get ready for our Euro 2024 coverage. The European Championships, which I'm really looking forward to. So that's sort of the near future for the soccer side of things here on the show.
Yeah, lots on the table. So
yep.
And let's we've got another F1 race coming up in a week or so. So mm-hmm. off a bit until I believe it's the 17th of this month. But,
yeah, next week.
Sure of that.
Yeah.
And
of course,
creeping up on the Indy 500. And I don't know for sure if tackling the chicane will be. I would love to do a live pre-race show mm-hmm. from our venue there. So trying to put that together, and I think it's, I think we can do it. We'll be there Thursday,
mm-hmm.
which is before carb day. And I think that Thursday evening, whatever that, I don't know what the date is, but we will possibly try to do a remote show from our venue there on Thursday. If, and you and I can talk later about that, but yeah, I want to bring a bunch of people in and do like a 4 or 5 minute segment with the crew.
Yeah.
The Indy crew, and just have people dip in and kind of have a little conversation with them about what race weekend means to them.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be awesome. So
that would be great for sure. Yeah. I mean, that obviously the month of May in IndyCar is a huge event. So I think it actually gets going tomorrow, I think, with the GP practices and then qualifying, and then the Indy GP is Saturday at the Speedway. Now, if you're not familiar, they run the road course there. And then next week is Speed Week. So you have practice sessions, you have rookie orientation, and then what I think is like, if you're listening and this is kind of your first time kind of taking in the month of May in IndyCar, you make sure you watch Indy 500 qualifying, which is next weekend. That is genuinely the most, I think, one of the most compelling events on the IndyCar calendar.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So there's, I think there's going to be 35 entries this year and only 33 race. So two cars will be sent home. So that is always, I think, great watching their qualifying. And then obviously the week of, you have practice and carb day and then the race. So
yeah,
it's always a very fun month in IndyCar for sure.
So we'll lock down that Thursday date for the race weekend, and I will haul all of our studio gear to Indiana. And I think it would be awesome if we just could do a show and bring Jimmy Hill. We'll bring the Ritter clan onto the microphone and just, you know, just kind of have a, just have a show where we just bring people in and talk.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be great. It'd be great.
So that's my plan for the upcoming Indy race weekend.
Yep. All right. Sounds good. Lots on the way here on the program. Lots on the way.
Okay. So I think if you're good,
yeah, I'm good. I'm ready to shut it down for this one here.
We've hit the hour mark.
That we have.
For this one, and I guess we'll get gone.
All right, spin the hits here.
What a match day this was.
It's lights out and away we go.
For executive producer Richard Tanaka, Paul Mossberg, Scott Persenz, and Mickey Avicio, this has been Tackling the Chicane, copyright 2024. We will see you next time.